Have you ever had that home at last feeling? I invite you for a minute to dwell in that feeling. Remember where you were, who you were with. If you have not had that feeling, I invite you to imagine it. I mentioned during the first Sunday of this month that the themes we're reflecting on this year are mostly the values articulated in the proposed revisions to Article 2 of the UUA bylaws, which we will vote on all of our member congregations at our upcoming General Assembly next month. The bylaws are being revised for several reasons, among them the requirement to review them periodically, because since Unitarian Universalism is a living tradition that changes as we learn and experience things, we expect there to be changes in how we talk about who we are and what's most important to us. Beyond that requirement, though, is the reality that we have indeed learned and grown, and that the words we currently use to describe ourselves aren't reflective of that growth, especially around the need to be expansive enough to offer that feeling of home in our faith tradition to everyone. Many of our congregations, for example, like ours, have adopted an 8th principle to state our explicit commitment to the work of dismantling the culture of white supremacy, to stand along the original 7 principles outlined in the current UUA bylaws, which were adopted with the last revision in 1985. The world has changed in a lot of ways since then, and so has our understanding of who we are and of what it means to be welcoming and inclusive. We want to be people who urge each other into being. Unitarian Universalists have been on a learning journey around this for a long time. I'm going to tell you about a couple of our trailblazers who had to work much harder than they should have to be seen and honored for their contributions to our faith. Olympia Brown, a Universalist and one of the first women ordained in this nation, actually had to convince people who were opposed to women in the ministry, people in power, that she could complete the required course of study when she attended seminary in 1861 to 1863. Then she finished that with honors and had to convince reluctant ministers to ordain her and allow her to be called to parish ministry. She continued to face micro and macro aggressions as she fought her way to acknowledgement by her almost exclusively male colleagues. And she wrote of her career, quote, "Those who may read this will think it strange that I could only find a field in run-down or comatose churches," because she did serve very small churches in decline. "But they must remember," she wrote, "that the pulpits of all the prosperous churches were already occupied by men and were looked forward to as the goal of all the young men coming into ministry with whom I, at first the only woman preacher in the denomination, had to compete. All I could do was take some place that had been abandoned by others and make something of it. And this I was only too glad to do." Some of you know that the church she served in Racine near us is now named after her because of the need to honor that one. Egbert Ethelred Brown, no relation, the first Black man to be ordained as a Unitarian minister, had to fight to be seen and supported as well. He discovered Unitarianism in 1888 and decided to become a member in 1907. He was in Jamaica at the time, and he appealed to the American Unitarian Association for getting help, for help getting to the US to attend seminary. They encouraged him, but they didn't do anything to help him obtain permission to move to the US. He was finally able to enroll in 1910, and he was ordained in 1912, returned to Jamaica to try to plant a church there. The AUA provided some financial support at first, but actually withdrew it in 1915. He had to return to the US in 1920, and there he founded the Harlem Community Church in New York in the midst of the Harlem Renaissance. The church was tiny, barely 30 members, and he rarely got paid. The AUA provided no funding and little moral support, and his position and his finances were unstable for his entire career. This was during a time that his white colleagues were actually getting good denominational support. Lest you think that it was a time of times. When I look up these two people on UUA sources, I find stories of their tenacity, their dedication, about how they loved our faith tradition in spite of how our institution treated them. I'm grateful that we can look back and see their stories for what they were. Uphill battles for recognition during times when their life, when their work and lives were not honored, because this is how we learn, right? By facing some of our painful stories. Y'all should know that these histories aren't just in the distant past. The empowerment controversy in the 1960s is a more recent example of our institutional inability to commit to supporting or sometimes even seeing the work and needs of Black Unitarian Universalists. And even today, ministers and other religious professionals who are people of color still too often find themselves having to leave parts of themselves behind in the largely white dominated congregations they serve. And while my lesbian and gay colleagues are now thriving in their work, many, not all, but many of my transgender and gender expansive colleagues are still having to worry about whether they'll find a congregation to serve that they can thrive in as their whole selves. This invisibility isn't limited to religious professionals. UUs who have marginalized identities have reported and still report that they often don't see people like that in our pulpits, our stories, and our communities. You might be wondering by now how sharing these hard realities relates to today's topic of celebrating a tradition of welcome and inclusion. I want to lift up that our faith tradition did change because of the lives and work of these and many other trailblazers and are still changing. Their stories are hard to hear for sure, but just the fact that they're being told means that change is happening. When I started seminary in 2009 and I went to the online Dictionary of Unitarian and Universalist Biography, yes, there is such a place, and yes, it's a wealth of information. I would see back then lots of text walls, very dense, about white men. Today's dictionary's landing site is filled with images, offering more accessibility for visual learners and people like me who want to see who these people are. And those pictures now prominently feature women and people of color, and the biographies are being done, really done. And I want to lift up that change is ongoing, right? It's not just listening to these stories and say, okay, we're done, right? We've done some work. Tomorrow's dictionary, will include more people of color and more women and more transgender and gender expansive people. Aww. It's a hard morning. Tomorrow's dictionary will include more people of color and women and gender expansive people, because today we have institutionalized support for clergy and for lay people in Unitarian Universalism who are Black, Indigenous, and people of color, who are women, who are queer, who are transgender, non-binary, and gender expansive, who are disabled, who hold other identities that have not historically been recognized and honored by the curiarchy in which we have spoken. Today, we're working to expand the language we use to define and describe ourselves: interdependence, justice, equity, generosity, transformation, and pluralism with love at the center as our values. That's what this bylaws revision is about, reflecting the changes that we're making within and between us. Today, like in the early 80s, when women led the movement to change our language to be gender inclusive, which at that time meant say men and women, people who have not been seen by our institutions are leading us into understanding how important welcome and inclusion are and making change be possible. And I want you to know that for every hard story, there's one like this, told by the Reverend Gail Gazenheimer, one of her first experience with Unitarian Universalism in those same 1980s. She writes, "I was 38 years old, living in Maine, driving a snowplow for a living and feeling very sorry for myself when a friend invited me to his church. He said it was different. I rudely refused. I cursed his church. All blanking churches are the same, I informed him. They say they're open, but they don't want queer folk. To heck with church." My friend persisted. He knew his church was different. He told me his church cared about people, embraced diverse families, and worked to make a better world. He assured me I could come and not have to hide any aspects of myself, so I went. And I dressed so carefully for my first Sunday visit. I spiked my short hair straight up into the air. I dug out my heaviest, oldest work boots, the ones with the chainsaw cut that exposed the steel toe. I got my torn jeans and my leather jacket. There would not be a shred of ambiguity this Sunday morning. They would embrace me in my full Amazon glory, or they could fry ice. I carefully arranged my outfit so it would highlight the rock hard chip I carried on my shoulder. I bundled every shred of pain and hurt and betrayal I had harbored from every other religious experience in my life. And I lumbered into that tiny meeting house on the coast of Maine. I expected the gray-haired ladies in the foyer to step back in fear. That would have been familiar. Instead, they stepped forward, offered me a bulletin and a newsletter, and invited me to stay for coffee. It was so odd, they never even flinched. They called me dear. Stay for coffee, dear. Stay for coffee. I stayed for Unitarian Universalism. Over time, the good folks of that church loved up the scattered parts of me and guided me from shattered to whole, from outcast to beloved among men. Reverend Gail Geisenheimer. She's now a retired. Unitarian Universalism as an institution wants everybody who comes to our doors to be able to tell a story like that. This brings me to the other thing that I want to celebrate today, which is this congregation. I have heard stories of coming home and being urged into being told by so many of you who are part of this community, and I have one myself. And this is just, I missed a word. This is not just how we happened to be. There's been so much intentionality and work that's been done over the years. We changed our name from the original church to congregation just a couple of years after we were founded, partly because my understanding is, at least, that we believed it was more than inclusive word. We became a designated welcoming congregation. Does anyone know when we did that? It was before I got here. Okay, that's okay. Sometime in the 80s or 90s, is when, no, 93 is when we started.
That was later than that.
All right, late 90s, early 2000s.
And that was a year, and that was 2000.
Okay, 2000 something. Awesome, we did it. After going through this program designed to help us become more welcoming for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender folks, that's what the program is about. We've hosted and participated in numerous anti-racism trainings to broaden our understanding of what our citizens of color need to be seen. We participate in the work of peace and justice in our community, not just because we believe it's the right thing to do, although that is true, but also because we believe that everyone has the right to feel at home, to be seen and cared for, and urged into being. We specifically train Sunday morning greeters to help create a welcoming atmosphere on Sunday mornings. That is not an accident that we do here on Sunday mornings. And we also know that the work of welcome is not limited to those four people that are doing it like that. Many of us have worked with our growing edges around all of this, right? Because change is hard. Because when we're people who are seen and served by systems that marginalize others, which many of us are in some of our identities at least, we find ourselves disoriented because we're no longer at the center. Sometimes we confuse that with thinking that we're suddenly not being seen or honored. And it's hard and necessary and good work to find the joy and the inclusion that we are creating and to stay a part of it. These and other things are ways we develop the understanding of the two beasts in our time for all ages, to learn to see and honor each other for who we are, not necessarily for who we want each other to be. I want to invite your participation in this celebration of our congregation. I want to ask you to shout out if you have things that I haven't said, right, about how we are working towards welcome and inclusion. Shout out things I'm missing. I will repeat them into this microphone.
Assisted listening devices.
Assisted listening devices here in the sanctuary. And the invitation to move around, right, if you need to, or that table over there.
Chairs with arms.
Chairs with arms.
Yes.
Yeah, well, I know. We need more of those. That's all we have, folks, that we could get in here.
Zoom option.
Zoom option. Yeah.
Remodeling the space.
Remodeling the space. Yeah.
Accessible
restrooms and gender neutral restrooms.
Choices in using.
Choices in music.
Adapting lyrics in music.
Adapting lyrics in music when they don't suit who we are anymore. Sorry, my balance.
Inviting more guest speakers of color.
Inviting more guest speakers of color. Yes, yes, the musicians were here last week with the Palestinian folk song. Yeah, that last week, the week before, it was 2 weeks. Yeah.
On a Zoom chat, there's solar panels on.
Zoom chat says solar panels on the roof. We don't have solar panels. Virginia says behind me, sometimes it's aspirational. Yeah. Outreach. We want to do outreach. Yeah, we have done outreach in the past. Before COVID came and turned us upside down, we often had booths at Pride. We marched in the Pride Parade. Juneteenth, we had a presence. It'd be lovely to pick that up again. See me after service if you want to be part of them. Mm-hmm. Juneteenth is coming up. Yeah. Thank you for this. There is a lot to celebrate. I talk a lot about how much work there is to do, and I realize I don't talk often enough about how much there is to celebrate. It was a lot to celebrate. I want to end by sharing the quote from this week's e-news that someone lifted up in a small group I met with recently. Y'all actually read this stuff. It's great. The quote is from the diversity, equity, and inclusion speaker and consultant Verna Myers, who says, "Diversity is being invited to the party." And UUism has done a good job inviting people to the party. She finishes, "Inclusion is being asked to dance." Thank you for not just thinking that inviting people to the party is enough, and for doing all the things you do to ask each other to dance. This is how we make space where people can tell stories later about how they felt at home. May it be so, and may we continue to be so.